And I am so sorry.
Oh, you're good. What's going on?
Nah, just trying to get up here and get a daggum signal so I could, start recording. Hey, did you see you had like 200 and some followers now?
Yeah, it's growing. It's going good.
Yeah, that is really cool. Today, on top of a very historic day, today is me and the lovely Miss McCray, Tony McCray, 18th wedding anniversary. Yay!
Both of you.
Yeah. So very excited.
Any festivities?
No, she went to go talk to somebody because somebody's got a Dalmatian and it's a little puppy. It's 8 months old.
So you're getting a Dalmatian puppy?
No. I mean, she's beautiful though, Waz. I mean, she really is. Maybe I can send you some pictures. You can post it. All right. So to update you on last weekend, going to Cherokee and drop it about $500 on waders and
nice
fly and fishing implementations and whatever. Guess how many trout we got?
None.
Zero.
Yeah,
we caught more when me and you were in Bryson, or not Bryson City, but Maggie Valley,
with $10 fishing poles
from the Dock Demons. From, well, we're not plugging them, but support your local Walmart. Thank you. So today, and guess what? First Sergeant Tony McCray has agreed, because she felt one pull from the trout up there that hit her line and broke her line, that she wants to start fishing now. So I'm very excited. So
yeah, Christina was the same way. When she first started, once you get the itch, you want to keep fishing.
Yep. So, but it was fun though. We had a great time being in the Cherokee Nation and, looking back at, who was right, who was wrong, and the French and Indian War. That kind of, you think about it, you're like, wait a minute, we were on the wrong side. What? But what's important about the 19th of April?
Big day anniversary.
Okay.
One anniversary obviously is super important, but today was 246 years ago, the Battle of Lexington and Concord.
Yep. The shot heard around the world.
Yeah. I learned so much yesterday and today. I don't know. I share that like emerging Revolutionary War thing sometimes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They have a really good like Zoom they do, and they'll have like people on and they'll interview. And they had the last night, his Facebook page is History Untapped, or Untapped History, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
And okay. They do tours of like national parks.
Oh, that'd be so cool, man.
Yeah. And he actually reenacts for Lexington Concord.
That's awesome. I know that this year or the next couple of years is going to be really, because of what you said, it's the 247th, right?
246.
Yeah, 246. So within the next 4 years, they're coming up to the 250th. And I know that a lot of states, in the 13 colonies, original 13 colonies, are going to be gearing up for a lot of Rev War kind of things that are going on. So if you get a chance, man, get out and support them, even with COVID, get your shot, whatever, right?
Yeah, so he was talking about, they've been doing this for years, and he wrote a couple of books on it, but this guy is apparently like one of the premier historian types. So his Facebook is Untapped History, and throughout the day today, he would post on the hour or on the minute what had happened at that point in time, throughout the day.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was all really right, cool, because it just kept notifying me.
I'm going to test your knowledge, Waz, right?
Yep.
At what time did the British make it to the Lexington Green where Captain Parker was at? What time in the morning?
So Let me do math in my head. Probably 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Very close. 5 o'clock in the morning. 5 o'clock in the morning, if I'm correct. And
yeah.
You had the militia that had been called out, and the militia had stood to, not so much stood to out on the green, but they had actually, you know, stayed awake in their cabins and in their homes and everything, you know, because they were so nervous about it. You know, that's what's crazy is like, here's a government, here's everything we know, here is, you know, our king and his authority, and now we're going to, you know, maybe stand up to, you know, his army. What's going to happen to us? You know, I mean, I understand a lot of people think patriotism and everything, but, you know, if you were there 246 years ago, I think your thoughts of patriotism might have been a little bit different. What do you think, Juan?
No, I agree. And like you were saying, you know, kind of how it started in the morning. But he talks about this guy, Jonas Parker. Have you ever heard of Jonas Parker?
Yeah, he was the captain, wasn't he?
So there is Captain Parker who did Parker's Revenge.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's another, he's just a 54-year-old militiaman. And the first volley happens, right? So people don't know what the volley is. That's like,
right,
they stand face to face, you know, they fire the shots. So after the first volley, some of his Lexington militia kind of retreated a little bit. And this 54-year-old Jonas Parker took a knee, started reloading, and he said something along the lines of, he's not running. And he fired again. And then they shot him on their second fire volley. And then as he's laying on the ground, still trying to load his weapon, they ended up bayoneting him.
Yeah. Yep.
But he refused to retreat off the field.
Yep.
He just said, I'm staying. But so I didn't hear this until yesterday, right? I always thought that, you know, they were Minutemen, right?
Right.
The militia companies were Minutemen. That's kind of like the National Guard, even their logo is a Minuteman.
Right. Yep.
Right. But what is a training band? Have you ever heard that term, training band?
A training band?
Yep. So apparently there are training bands and then there are Minutemen.
Okay.
And I don't necessarily know what separates them or what makes them different, but they're still militias.
Well, heck, let's look it up while you keep talking about it. Hey.
Yeah. Mark,
so I really like this certain kind of guy's clothes that he makes for reenactment stuff. And I just want to get like a civilian war of or rev war. Hey, Waz, my wife's in here with cake.
Nice.
Are you ready, Waz? We're going to sing it. Ready? Happy anniversary. Anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary, First Sergeant. Say hey to the crowd.
Yay.
We have 200. Waz has 220 some followers.
Our last episode had quite a few listens already. I mean, normally, you know, it takes a little bit to get up, but ours was pretty quick getting up there. So I appreciate everybody that's listening.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I do too. Because it's cool, man, because it's so funny. I know it doesn't really mean anything, but I served like 31 years. Waz is still doing his thing. So it was funny. Like when we met, I love to talk about history and everything. So I always wanted to go up to Concord and Lexington and do that whole, you know, thing. And you know, with the climate we have now, you know, you don't want to disrespect anybody. So, I mean, you know, maybe it is time to kind of turn over a leaf and do more Rev War stuff. But with my leg, I can't walk that good. But I don't know. I still want to just buy one of those outfits just to be like a regular civilian back in that time.
I should have watched. We should have tried to watch something. I'm sure they live streamed it. That was probably pretty cool. Especially, like, I thought it was relatively quick. They were there. They fought these militia and Minuteman companies and these training bands, they didn't stop fighting until like a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
They chased them all the way to wherever they retreated. I think maybe out of Charlestown or something.
Mm-hmm.
But so let's see what it I mean, the Battle of Lexington itself really only lasted like what? And a few minutes, really. It wasn't that long, but everything in the day that followed. So let's see. Yeah. 8 men died, 10 wounded from the Lexington training band. That was the unit, the militia unit that fought in Lexington at, 5 or 6 in the morning.
Right.
But then the British troops started marching towards Concord. And that's where it kind of got interesting, I guess. Where it kind of continued, That's where you started to see like all these other militia companies and these Minuteman companies all start kind of fleeing from their houses and going to whatever battlefield they were going to beat the British up.
Yep. And, if you really listen, you can almost hear the drums,
So what song is that?
That is On to Boston. It was a British kind of British song that they did during that time, But man, could you imagine it? I mean, we called ourselves Minutemen, excuse me, for being in the guard and everything like that. But I mean, could you imagine that? You've heard all the things that are going on. You might have had an opinion one way or the other. Are you going to be, is taxation without representation, is it that big of a deal? Are the hotheads down in Boston that are throwing tea, maybe I'm a land merchant or a sutler or something like that, or whatever merchant that sells those goods, I bet you they weren't too happy about, all the tea getting thrown over, because then what do they have to do? They have to hike up the prices because it costs them more. And now they're going out in those villages and, loose lips sink ships. So, you had all kind of different little backstories going on. And it was, had to be some type of divine intervention so that we got, there are so many revolutions in history that just,
didn't work.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? And I hope that people don't.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I hope people don't lose sight of, that we are Americans. Everybody. So, but I love.
Yeah. I think that's what makes this interesting too. Reading it is it kind of makes you look at things a little bit different,
Could you have done it?
A group, they overthrew a government that was pretty brutal. Obviously it was super small at the time. It wasn't like 300 million people.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
I mean, they struggled for almost a decade in the process of doing it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even on today, 246 years ago, the British pretty much burned down everything on the way from Lexington Common back to where they evacuated out in an effort to not get sniped and not get any like choke points and
fatal funnel.
Kind of punish everybody.
Yeah.
So just think of that, for a couple of years, this thought is kind of being whispered, and then you're training in a militia company, doing drills, as much as you guys can to get ready for it. And then your families all flee the house for the day. The wives and kids come back to determine whether or not their husband made it home alive from the battle. Plus their house is burned down to the ground. They have nothing.
Yeah. Yep. And that was no promise.
But they said that. So
yeah,
that really actually affected the British the most. I bet you if they had just fought the militia units, and then kind of beat feet, went back, didn't do the whole burn, scorch earth kind of deal, the public opinion would have been a little different. But apparently in that time, looting was considered almost as bad as murder.
Right. Yeah.
And British units looted all these houses before they burned them to the ground. So, once these other civilians heard that, they're like, that's atrocious.
Yeah.
You're His Majesty's people, you're His Majesty's soldiers, and you're looting and burning. And
yeah, and you got, you know, soon after that, also you had, you know, to where you had to open your homes to British soldiers, and they took precedence in your home. It's not hard. I mean, it's hard, not hard enough to get out there and work in the garden every day, fighting the weeds and everything with a piece of stick, you know, so that you have enough potatoes to eat. But now you have a British soldier that will report you if you're not doing the right thing for Her Majesty's government, or, you know, or, well, back then, King George's government, you know, and you know, you were expected to feed them, to mend their clothing. You didn't have to pay them anything, but you had to do, you know, you had to actually, you know, at least basically wait on them hand and foot, you know. And that made a lot of people upset.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I mean, and you got to remember back at that time, the time of Henry the Great and the time of, you know, the Seven Years' War, the French and Indian War and all that, you know, it's all very pious and chivalrous and so on and so forth. But then you're getting into the back countries of some, you know, crazy land, and here you are, you know, getting sniped at by some red Indians behind a tree, hooping and hollering, you know. I mean, it's scary.
Right. Yeah, there's none of that gentleman-like. Mm-hmm. Each line takes the field. They take their shots. Mm-hmm. You retreat the day. You know where your person is.
Yep. And you got to remember, you know, a big thing with colonial, you know, colonial personage of that time, you know, that had been here a while, you know, they had to be able to hunt and kill. And if you've ever fired a flintlock musket with just a smoothbore ball and tried to, you know, let alone sneak up on a deer, but then be close enough to kill it. Yeah, you know what I mean? Now, yeah. I don't know how much was bucking ball, but, you know, what kind of load do you put in there to kill a deer? You know, it just kind of boggles your mind that less than 246 years ago, or whatever, you know, we don't really know, or we don't practice, you know, stuff like that, you know? So, I don't know.
I was talking about that earlier. You know, like, they had set up an ambush at one point today. So the provincials, I guess, is what they kind of refer to as the militias. But so we'll just say, like, the Minuteman militia companies.
Then you had, like you said, provincials that were still under king and country that would fall out with the regulars too. You know? Yeah.
So they, at Parker's Revenge, basically, I guess they set up an ambush at a bridge. And when it crossed over, they, you know, the militia companies had ambushed some of these redcoats.
Right.
And I don't want to laugh, but I was like, you know, there was a handful of deaths right in this ambush.
Right.
And you have a whole company ambushing another company and a choke point.
Yeah.
And there's like a handful of deaths.
Right.
If an infantry company now was to ambush an infantry company at a choke point at a bridge, there would be 200 plus casualties immediately.
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, there wouldn't be only three wounded after firing hundreds of rounds. There would be hundreds dead after firing hundreds of rounds.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, but that just shows you, I mean, at what distances. I mean, I'm not sure about flintlocks or brown besses or whatever the other ones were called, but man, you know, you had really close for that thing to do. You know, lot of bird shot? Have you ever seen the movie April Morning?
No, but they actually talked about that yesterday, that movie.
Yeah.
That's about today.
And I like it. And the main protagonist, you know, the young gentleman that not quite old enough, but you know what? He's proving himself in front of his dad. So his dad allows him to be out on the green with him. You know, he had a very young, raven-haired young girl. I don't know who the actress was, but man, that was like, I always thought she was very attractive, you know, even in my, you know, 15-year-old mind or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, still out there listening to our podcast, hit me up. No, I'm kidding. Got him. Yeah, so, I mean, that movie, I love that movie.
I got to watch it. They had talked about it yesterday. I never heard of it, but.
Yeah. Yep. Let me see. I'll name out the cast here. You remember seeing that, didn't you, babe? I guess not. Nope. She told me to go get stuffed. Hey, don't hit me with those crackers. She threw like Kneller wafers at me. Y'all know what Kneller wafers are?
Yeah, we call them vanilla wafers, though.
Huh?
We call them vanilla wafers, but yeah.
Why would you ever add the extra va to it? You just say Kneller. I know what you're talking about. It's just like y'all guys go, hey, can you mash that button? I'm like,
push. What? Yeah, no, you're the one that says that.
Whatever. You know what the hell I'm talking about. Hey, I've got a brain injury, okay? Yeah. Dang, what was I looking up? The movie.
So how many casualties do you think, so about 2 hours from now, about 6:30 p.m., the British finally reached Charlestown and were protected by the Navy and then started to evacuate. How many?
I think it was close to 300, wasn't it?
Yeah, so total casualties, right, if you count wounded and dead. There was for the colonists, they had 49 killed, 39 wounded, 5 were missing.
Yeah.
The British, had 73 killed, 174 were wounded, and 26 were missing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, so almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you got to think, man, that had to be so rough, man. All right. So I'm going to, I'm sorry, Waz. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I'm going to tell you the cast of April Morning. Moses Cooper was played by Tommy Lee Jones.
Nice.
Susan Bakley was the wife, Sarah Cooper. Chad Lowe played the son, Adam Cooper. That wasn't quite old enough to get to the militia, but guess what? They did. And then the one, Meredith Salinger, it was Ruth Simmons, who was the love interest of Adam Cooper, who was played by Chad Lowe. It's a 1988 film. Man, you should watch it. You know, I don't critique movies for, well, you know, they didn't have the right buttons or whatever.
Right.
I mean, the only time we really say anything is if they like put the chevrons like upside down on the sleeves, like on ACUs or something, you know. Just
yeah, and there's weird. A couple movies that have done stuff like that, or they wear their the collar up.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, where, I mean, who, you know, that's when you go, okay, was it a Fobbit that actually was on the set and said, yeah, that's exactly what we do in the Army or Navy, Air Force. Yeah, but like I said, I like the movie. I actually really enjoy it. Really, really enjoy it. You know,
I'll have to watch it for sure because I never heard of it till last night. So,
yeah.
I mean, Tommy Lee's in it. It's got to be good.
Oh yeah, and you know, then he's his son that's played by Chad Lowe. I mean, you know, he's ready to do what he thinks is right, but then spoiler alert, he's thinking about when you're in the middle of battle and instead of just one ball, you have a bunch of bird shot. So you're counting out 8 rounds or 6 rounds of bird shot to put down there on X amount of powder that you're measuring out to put in your pan and to put down with the musket or with the balls, the projectiles during a combat situation. And, you know, Tommy Lee Jones looks at him and says, you will not have time. You will not have time to count that. Put it in your hand. Feel it in your hand. Know that is what you need to kill a man. Well, what if I don't measure out the powder, like the son said? And he goes, is your breech busted? Is it leaking or whatever? No, it won't burst, you know? So it's pretty, pretty strong. Like, if you watch the movie, it's pretty cool.
Well, that was something, too, that I didn't – I always thought that, like, the people from today were not necessarily overly trained. Like, the militias, that they were just, like, you know, kind of flying by the seat of their pants. But apparently the Lexington militia, the training band, had been drilling, like, 3 to 5 times a week for months.
Right.
And
because,
like,
you could get different bounties, you know? You could get different awards, like, you know, your unit, you know, your whatever for whatever county, you know, repel whatever attack, and y'all got new muskets from the government, you know, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, and, like, I didn't know that. I just figured that these militias weren't kind of, like, they were just put together by people wanting for the good cause. But, like, these individual communities funded it, more or less. Like, the Lexington group, I mean, the community had – they had blankets, they had satchels, they had, you know, canteens, they had everything that they needed. They had full uniforms when they showed up on the field.
Right. Yep. You know, instead of, you know, maybe a couple of shirts or whatever,
right,
you know, or deer skin hides.
Whatever. I mean, everyone was different, you know. Yeah. Every militia would have kind of their own thing going on, but.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at it, too, like I was talking about before, I mean, and it's a little bit up your way, like we were talking about with having the Tories and the Whigs and everything fighting each other. But down south, you had a little bit more of a division because you had, like, you know, you had Scots from the coast that were still, you know, affiliated with the British, even though, you know, they really, you know, didn't want to be, but, you know, they were, you know, the guys that were the go-to guys down there. And, you know, there's a battle of Moore's Creek that's close to Wilmington, North Carolina. I think it's Moore's Creek, I believe. I don't know. Anyway, the Scots were decimated there, you know. But then you have the Scots that were from the area from where my great-great-grandfather was from. And that's a character right there. Maybe we can just do a story on the Max for me, you know. Anyway. You know, because his name was Edmund, and he, like, switched side like 3 different times. And he finally got a pension for at least a year before he died in 1832.
So what do you get the pension for the Revolution?
Yes, the Revolution. But what's funny is, for years, my aunt that's already passed, she thought that Edmund, it was 2 different people, because he ranged from around Hillsborough all the way back towards into Tennessee in 1740. I mean, that was what, you know, who is this guy? He came from Scotland. I'm not sure exactly when. He worked his way down the Appalachian Mountain. He came into around Hillsborough. He actually became a regulator for when they had that, not Giver Courthouse, but the other fight before the Revolution. Well, before they went into that fight, him and his buddy capture their captain and turn him over to the militia, who was still with the British at that time, you know, against the regulators. And some of them were hung. Well, fast forward to 1781, and Edmund McMahon finds himself in the lovely company of Mr. Ferguson, a British officer at the Battle of King's Mountain. And he is a Tory, fighting as a Tory as the Over the Mountain boys come up the side of the mountain and kick the crap out of the British, right?
Oh, yeah.
So he was captured. He was taken to Charlotte, and he was let go. Well, he somehow wound up outside of Guilford Courthouse, joining the militia from around in that area at whatever age, at least 40 by this time, I think. And he was actually at that battle too, but fighting for the, you know, the fledgling government of the United States, you know, at the Battle of Guilford Courthouse, Edmund McMahon.
So he switched sides during.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he lived to be like 103. So he had his pension for almost like a year. But when it reads, it's like a person does not know name of commander, but doesn't remember that it was one that was turned over and hung in Hillsborough or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Because like the regulators were upset because they were not getting their full shake of the money for doing all the farming and so on and so forth, you know? So, yeah. So there's a little bit of McMahon, or what a lot of people up north call McMahon.
McMahon, yeah. There's McMahon's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not a name for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. I mean, we weren't at the beginning, but yeah, when we saw whichever way the wind was blowing, we were like, okay. But with it.
Yeah, yep, I'm going to take this side. That's why I always wondered why I could never figure out why Benedict Arnold supposedly switched sides. I just didn't make sense.
Well, you know, what I thought was he was so upset for after doing all the great things that he did and you know, saving of the army and the, being the savior of, you know, of whatever, that, you know, he thought that him getting himself passed over was just unbearable, you know, and he, and a lot of people looked at him as he had a impediment because he had hurt his leg so bad. And, you know, he had, I saw on different movies that he had actually got into like some financial trouble. So it's funny how, you know, regulations for, you know, being able to get, you know, a security clearance is affected by what happened hundreds of years ago. Because you know what, you know, one guy was like, well, you know what, if I sell all this info to the whatever, I'm going to get paid, and you know, whatever, what, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, you know?
Yeah, and I'm,
so it's
like,
kind of funny.
He was, yeah. Wasn't he married to like a prominent named yes. British family?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And she, you know, I mean, I know in a, some of the different things that I've read, it kind of said that she had like a, you know, like it was fashionable to like the, you know, if you're from England, but you're just new to the colonies, to like the upstart rebels, you know, because really not that many people actually would see the rebel army out on the march because, I mean, you know, you had a really ragtag force of, you know, people that were, you know, things that were going just out of their control. And, you know, it's not like, I mean, if you've never got out and walked, I know you have, Waz, but just get out and walk like 10 miles, but then put like some potatoes over your back, some, you know, probably about maybe 30, 35 pounds of equipment, and then shoes that are usually uncomfortable to wear anyway, but now you're just trying to trek that are slicker than, you know, walking on a flat bottom creek with ballet slippers, you know?
Yeah, no treads on them whatsoever.
No. Oh, yeah. You know, when I used to do Civil War reenactments, I used to hate having to, like, go into Walmart for something. I know that's not PC for Civil War reenacting, but, you know, whatever. But it would be so slick, and you'd have, like, that half moon kind of cleat on the back that's like a horse's shoe.
Yep.
So you'd about bust it every time, man. It's funny. But, you know, I mean, like you said, you know, the other day, these guys, it was another breed, man. It was like, you know, these guys were no joke.
That's like this guy, Samuel Whitmore. He, right. This would have been towards the end of the day today. Right. He ambushed, it looks like he was by himself. He ambushed someone from the 47th Regiment of Foot, British soldiers. He drew out two pistols. He killed a he ambushed one soldier. Then he killed the second grenadier and mortally wounded the third.
Wow.
After he fired his third shot, the British finally reached him. They shot him in the face. They bayoneted him multiple times and left him on the ground to die.
Right.
Later that day, the militia found him. They took him to the doctor. The doctor said, you know, there's no hope. He lived another 18 years and ended up dying at the age of
98. Wow.
Isn't so he was crazy? So if you he must have been 80 years old when he did that. 80 years old. He walks outside with two pistols. He had enough. He's like, I'm going.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, it's just crazy. It's totally crazy. Because, I mean, I don't know. How do you decide at that moment, you know? Do you nut up or shut up, you know?
Yeah, and that's like when you think it must have been worse than how it sounds, you know? Like they must have just been that over everything and they were willing to. Well, they knew. I mean, shit, they must have known that that was going to be their last day. Like he did at 80 years old. He's walking outside with two pistols, ambushes a whole company of soldiers. Like, of course, he knows that it's probably it for him. But
yeah. And, you know, grenadiers are the biggest, strongest, tallest elite of the, well, not so much elite, but just the bigger of your line troops, you know, that they would use in the different, you know, units at that time. So a grenadier, not so much I'm going to throw a grenade, which they did have, like, you could light a fuse and it was very unstable, round ball packed with metal and powder, but, you know, but the grenadiers also wore usually like a taller cap to be, you know, to even look more menacing, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool, you know.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, talk about a legend. 80 years old. I mean, that was crazy to even live to 80 at that time frame.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, God. And that's like, it's not with any Walmarts or anything like that, you know. Jebediah's squirrel and beaver traps, you know.
No medicine.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, you didn't get a break for a headache, no. Or you had, you know, something wrong with your belly, a little bit of consumption. Nope. You just kept on getting it.
Yeah, they also, in that time frame, drank a significant amount of alcohol.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pickled through history, right?
That was like their prime drink, something alcoholic.
That's crazy, man.
I forget what they were saying. Was the like an average person, you know, drinks X now a year of pure alcohol? Like if you were to if you would just say pure,
right?
And there it was like they do that a week.
Ugh.
Back in that time frame.
Oh yeah. Wow. I mean that's unbelievable.
But you see, like in here, you know, in today, 246 years ago, a lot of these meeting places were taverns. Like that's where.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those guys were probably out the night before, like you said, all nervous too in their homes. They're probably catching a buzz, being like, "Well, if I'm going to do this."
Yep. Exactly. Well, then you know, I mean, you got the ones that were left behind, and then you know, it's even years before somebody finds out, you know, that hey, they had a relative that lived. You know, was killed there and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was some of it was fast, and you had to be, you know, you had to listen, you had to read, you know, what was going on, you know, in the papers and everything and make your own. Wow. I mean, because, you know, the British, I get it, you know, they were there and, but you got to remember that there was a real close relationship. It wasn't like, you know, all of our people were here and then the British come and took over. I mean, these people came from British colonies, came from, you know, different places in Europe and in, you know, Great Britain and all that. So that's what's wild. It wasn't like, you know, oh, well, I'm originally from North Carolina, you know, those guys got used up, you know, the original people that were here, they got used up and thrown away, you know?
Yeah, that is a good point. Like, at some point, like I said, it must have just been so bad to where it changed. Like,
right.
to change it to where you're, it, like you said, it's not like, okay, today there's, you know, 300 million people and there's 300 different backgrounds, you know, or 300 million different backgrounds. Like, right. For the most part, they were all from either England or somewhere close to England.
Yeah.
The Wales. Soldiers were living in the colonies.
Yeah.
I mean, apparently, you know, Gage wasn't a terrible guy.
Right. Yeah. And you had, and you know, you had just as many militias that were loyal to the British as you did, you know, any that just came up for some upstart government. And, you know, you had people that would actually hire people to be in militias because, you know, they might want to support, oh yeah, free whatever, but guess what? You know, they sell powder to the British, or they sell cattle to the British, or they sell, cabbage, you know, to the Germans. I mean, you make $1 million doing that back then, you know?
Oh, yeah. So, imagine, like, your livelihood, if it relies on feeding the, you know, the government that's there. Obviously, you do want to continue that. Like,
You know, another good show that me and my wife watched when our son told us to watch it was Turn. Right, honey? Mm-hmm. And that was a really good, you know, series about, you know, some of the beginnings and some of the twists and the turns that, you know, you might have had to do from a hot-headed person to, you know, that you're full of patriotism for a cause, and then you realize that, you know, even though you're trying to be a spy for maybe the colonists, you're still torn between your relationship with England and your families and stuff like that, you know. It's just lucky that the British weren't like, you know, some Korean and North Korean and Chinese, different things, you know, where they go, oh, you're going to go against the government? Okay, well, everybody for the next 52 millennia are going to be eradicated from your family line, you know?
Yeah, just ethnic cleanse the entire family, basically.
Yep.
But that's like, you know, not too far before the revolution, you had all these militias fighting, like you said, with the British in the French and Indian War.
Yep.
And apparently, when these militias would show up for duty for the French and Indian War, if they didn't have weapons, they were given weapons, right?
Right.
Well, the British never got back. Right? After the French Indian War. So a lot of these militia companies that ultimately fought against the British were using the weapons that the British Army issued them during the French Indian War.
All right. So imagine that and use it in the context, and I'm not being political or nothing like that, but that's kind of what happened against us in Afghanistan and Iraq. Sure. You know? I mean, you know, one man's, you know, terrorist is another man's freedom fighter, and, you know, one man's junk is another man's, you know, weapon of choice, you know? So, I mean, God, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how, you know, just telling you, like, with my great-great-great-grandfather on my mom's side, Edmund McMahon, you know, I mean, really? I mean, he played the sides to his advantage. And like I said, he had quite a bit of land holdings and stuff like that, even from, you know, western part of North Carolina, which, I mean, it wasn't like just, you know, we took a trip up to Asheville, I mean, to Cherokee the other week. I mean, you're riding for days through the mountains.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know, not
little paths that are barely passable by anything but a horse and foot.
Right. And this guy's owning it, and then all of a sudden, you know, however topsy-turvy, you know, he just knew how to play the situation. And, you know, was he a scoundrel for doing that, or was he, you know, a unsung Revolutionary War hero, you know? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, like we said the other day, history's written by the victor, so...
Oh, yeah.
If he had done that on the other side and they lost, if he had left the colonist side and went to the British side and lost, then it would be like he was a traitor, you know, piece of shit. But he left the bad side and he came to the good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people had resolves on both sides. I mean, you know, like, you know, like, even if you watch The Patriot, I mean, that's loosely based on like a couple of different characters, but you know, Francis Marion, you know, he took to the swamps in South Carolina and just become a total terror to the British, to Cornwallis and everything.
And he was the real person.
Right. Oh, yeah. 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 And then, you know, Bloody Tarleton. Tarleton was a real person. And he was just like the guy in the movie, really. He was a very, very sour, very upset about, you know, his father had squandered all these so-called riches in England and so on and so forth. And with him, you know, running a militia company of pro-British, you know, cavalry or mounted rifles. I mean, I don't know. I don't have anything in front of me, just kind of off the cuff. But anyway, you know, Tarleton had run down some militia before, and I believe they were from Tennessee, and he killed every single one of them. So when, you know, Tarleton was actually, you know, kind of cornered in some different battles, you know, a lot of the militia started yelling, you know, give them Tarleton's quarter, which meant, you know, the black flag, you know, kill everybody. And, you know, that could go to, you know, you're fighting your best friend's dad, you know, or your cousin that lives over wherever, because, you know, they stuck it out with the wrong side. Because, you know, once the war was over, you had a mass exodus of a lot of people leaving and going to Canada and stuff, you know, or moving as far north as they could.
Yeah, the loyalists, they fled.
Yeah.
Quebec.
And then you had, so then you had those guys that were, you know, the sons or cousins or great nephews of whatever. You know, these guys are living in what's called, you know, Upper Canada now, and they're pissed off. So, you know, when everything starts kicking off for that glorious part of history, you know, you still have lines of civilians in the United States that are, you know, history wise that were related, you know? So craziness.
I think we had a good talk on this big history day.
Yep. And that 18th anniversary, right, honey?
18th anniversary. Okay. That's an awesome milestone.
Say woohoo. Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, just hit me up, man. I like talking, you know?
Yeah, appreciate your time. Appreciate talking to you.
Yep, I think that was a great little podcast.
Yeah, after we hang up, go on my Facebook and look up, click the link that I shared about the Untapped History, and just scroll for the past 30 posts and just look at some of these time marks that he put on there and the things that happened today. It's really interesting. Right. It's really cool they did that. That's why I'm just saying I'm on here. I mean, I don't know the guy, but that's the most legit thing I've ever seen when it comes anything history related. Like, I mean, he posted probably 60 times today.
Really?
Yeah. Just, you know, everything that happened throughout the day, you'd say, you know, right now, on this time, this is what happened. Right now, this is what happened.
Don't really care about history. Just kind of think about what would have happened, you know, what would have been your decisions back then, not just a knee-jerk reaction to, you know, whatever is being publicized. But, I mean, what's your heart tell you? Dag, these guys did, but, you know, it is what it is. All right, Waz. Take care of yourself. All right, brother. I'll talk to you. All right, man. Later.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you.